be here. And thanks, Giffrey, for arranging the talk for me. Today I will talk about one of my recent works, published on Nature Physics in October.
It is on.
Yeah, but this one is not for, it's only for recording. So yeah, in October last year, and it's about experimentally probed topological orders and its breakdown via a quantum simulator. These are my collaborators. So basically, I collaborate with a lab who work on NMR quantum computing at the University of Science and Technology in China. That's Professor Peng. She owns the lab, and this was her PhD and now a postdoc. And this is Janet Han, who was a PI postdoc before, but now also my colleague at Fudan. So here's the outline. I guess I don't need to spend much time on explaining what topological orders are, because you guys know what these are. Basically, it's a new type of phases of matter that are beyond the description of Landau and Ginzburg paradigm, because the transition between different topological orders do not involve breaking of certain symmetries or restoration of certain symmetries. And a bunch of people, like including Xiaogang Wen, Zi, Wu, Wilczek, and many others. I cannot put so many pictures here. They proposed the idea of the concept of topological order to classify this new type of phases of matter. So in short, a topological order is a quantum phases of matter at zero temperature. And it is a gapped quantum phases of matter. Gapped means there is a finite gap between the ground states of the state, the ground state of the system, and the first excitations of the system. And this gap should be understood in thermodynamical limit, which means that it is independent of the size of the system when you take the thermodynamical limit of the system. And there may be multiple ground states. So the ground state may not be unique. And this ground state degeneracy depends only on the topology of the system. By topology, I mean the spatial topology, the physical topology of the system, rather than the topology in the momentum space. So the physical, suppose you have a physical system that lives in a piece of material that is a sphere, then there's a unique ground state. And if the material looks like a torus, then there may be k degenerate ground states. Okay? And this number can grow with the number of holes in the system. So you see, this ground state degeneracy, it depends on the topology of the system only, rather than the microscopic details of the system. This is also why such type of phases of matter are called topological phases. Okay. And this degeneracy is also called topological degeneracy, because it is protected by the topology of the system. As long as you don't cut the system open or do some really real damage to the system, the topological degeneracy is preserved. Okay. And on top of the degenerate ground states, there are also excitations, quasi-particle excitations. These excitations are called anions. Here, there's an example. Okay. Let's take the nu equals 1 over m fractional quantum Hall state as an example. So these states, they have Landau levels, which have a well-defined gap in the thermodynamical limit. So these are candidates of topological orders. And there is indeed topological degeneracy in such a fractional quantum Hall state, which is actually the denominator of this Feulin fraction. And to understand this ground state degeneracy, one should look at the entire system. A fractional quantum Hall state is a system of enormous number of electrons. Okay? These electrons, they are like people dancing in a huge ballroom. And if you look, you stand close by two of the dancers, you will see that they dance around each other in exactly m steps. For example, when m equals 3. This m equals 4 should be wrong. And when m equals 3, then these two dancers, they dance around each other in exactly 3 steps. Okay? But the what's interesting is if you fly above and look down on the at the entire ballroom, you will see that any pair of dancers, no matter how far away they are, they still dance around each other in exactly three steps. And certainly, this is not a phenomenon that you can understand locally. It is something, kind of global dancing pattern of the constituents in of the system. So this is how one may understand this topological degeneracy or the implication of the topological degeneracy. And as I just said, on top of these ground states, there are annual excitations. And the number of species of annual excitations equals the topological degeneracy on the torus. So for in this case, when the degeneracy M, there are M species of annuals. Okay, we can label them from 1 to A sub minus 1. And this one labels the trivial annual, which is always there. It's like the vacuum. And these are called annuals because they have some non-trivial self-statistics that are different from the usual boson and fermionic self-statistics of the usual bosons and fermions, which means that if you exchange two annuals of the same species, say J, there will be a phase factor generated on the wave function of the system or the state of the system. And this factor can be anything. So that's why it's called annuals rather than just half integers or integers. Okay. Apart from self-statistics, these annuals, they can have non-trivial braiding statistics as well. If you exchange two different annuals of different species, there will be a similar phase factor here. Okay. But this is for a simple type of annuals called abelian annuals. For non-abelian annuals, the situation will be different. And the action of exchanging or braiding annuals on the wave function of the system would be, in general, a matrix, a unitary matrix acting on the state of the system. And I will go back to that later. And apart from these statistical behaviors, annuals can also have interactions. And these interactions are called fusion. So if you have two annuals close by, J and K, they would fuse to different species, J plus K mod M. Mod M because we have at most M species. So this is just a quick example for you to get the properties of what topological orders are. And topological orders are not just important in theories, they are also important for applications. As proposed by Alexei Kidayev, two major applications of topological orders are the robust quantum memory. This is because the ground state degeneracy, or the ground state Hilbert space of a topological order, topologically ordered quantum phase, quantum state, is very robust against local perturbations. So what you can damage the ground state Hilbert space only by large surgeries. You cut the system open or do some other damage to the system. Okay? Otherwise, by local perturbations, you wouldn't be able to alter the ground state Hilbert space. So this ground state Hilbert space can be used as quantum memory, and it is robust. Apart from that, the annuals can also be used to do something interesting. So if you braid these annuals, and if these annuals are so-called non-abelian annuals, then this braiding would act on the initial state of these annuals like a unitary matrix. And this unitary matrix can be interpreted as a quantum gate. So, and at the end, you get some final state, and you measure the final state, you get the result of this quantum computation represented by this unitary operation. So this is the idea of topological quantum computation. And it is topological because the gates are implemented as the braiding of these annuals. And these braiding are also topological. So local perturbations wouldn't be able to cause any error in such a system. So these are the applications of topological orders and why we are interested and we should pay attention to them. So, and this is our subject today, which is one of the simplest topological orders called Z2 toric code on a torus. And on a torus, by torus we mean we have a lattice and a square lattice with a periodical boundary condition. So the lattice becomes a torus after the periodicity, And at each vertex of this, on this lattice, there's a spin half, which is the quantum spin living on it. And the model that describes the system is a simple Hamiltonian consisting of two kinds of operators. The first is called white plaquet operators. A white plaquet operator acting on these white plaquettes, and the yellow plaquet operators acting on each of the yellow plaquettes. Okay. So the white plaquet operator is actually a tensor product of four Pauli X matrices acting on the four spins at the four corners of a white plaquette. And the yellow plaquette operator is a tensor product of four Pauli Z matrices acting on the four spins at the four corners of each of the yellow plaquette. Okay. It is clear that these white plaquette operators and the yellow plaquette operators all commute with each other, because each of them is composed of even number of X and Z matrices. So they commute with each other, so rendering this Hamiltonian exactly solvable. And on top of that, you see these are just Pauli matrices and the tensor product of these Pauli matrices. So these X and Z operators, their eigenvalues are just 0 and 1s. So one can easily find out the ground states of such a Hamiltonian, which are the common zero eigenstate of these white and yellow plaquet operators. Okay, so how do the ground states of this Hamiltonian look like? The ground state look like a superposition of all possible configurations of these kind of loops. These loops can be thought as a virtual connection between spins that are aligned either in the X basis or in the Z basis. So there are two types of loops, right? The solid loops, which are the spins aligned in X basis, and the dashed loops, which connect the spins aligned in the Z basis. So, but how many ground states are there? I should say, what is the ground state degeneracy of such a system, such a Hamiltonian on the square lattice? The answer is 4, because these loops, these kind of loops, they are called trivial loops because they can be shrunk to a point, right? But they are non-trivial loops, like these loops that extends from one side of the lattice to the other side, right? And because of periodic boundary condition, these loops will be wrapping around the holes of the torus, right? And there are two directions, and two types of loops. So altogether, there will be 4 different kinds of loops. And these loops are called large loops, which cannot be shrunk to a point. So these loops actually represent the ground state Hilbert space. And there are 4 different types of them. So the ground state degeneracy is actually 4. Another way of telling the ground state degeneracy is to count how many degrees of freedom are there in this lattice, because there is a spin on each of the points, right? So in total, there are 2n square spins. But there are also these constraints on what the ground states can be. So altogether, because each of these constraints lives on a plaquette, right? So a ground state must be a common eigenvector of these operators. So each of them lives on a plaquette. So altogether, there will be 2n square constraints as well. So it looks like the total number of independent degrees of freedom will be 0, because 2n square minus 2n square is 0. However, these constraints, they are not all independent of each other. There are 2 global constraints that says that the multiplication of all these X operators is 1, and the multiplication of all the Z operators is 1. So these 2 global constraints tells you that the total number of independent degrees of freedom in the system is 2n square minus 2n square minus 2. So there are 2 independent degrees of freedom in the ground state space. And because the system is made of spins, so 2 to the power of 2, so there are altogether 4 states. The ground state degeneracy is actually 4, and they can be represented by these large loops. And correspondingly, there are 4 different species of anions. Code 1 is the trivial anion, or vacuum, and then E, which is the charge, M, which is the flux, and EM is the charge-flux composite. And each charge, I don't think I should explain more about this. Okay, so if you have questions, you can ask me about that. So this is the model and the Z2 Toric code topological order. Okay, and as I just said, the ground states are represented by these large loops around the torus, right? So we can have a loop around this direction, around the big hole, okay? And the loop can be labeled by four different states, 1, EM, and EM, representing, meaning that there are four degenerate ground states. And you can choose a loop along the other direction, another hole, and given the loop, the same set of labels. Okay? These two kinds of loops would be two sets of bases of the ground state Hilbert space. Okay. What's interesting is, like what I said, the ground state Hilbert space is actually protected by topology. So it doesn't matter how big the lattice is. As long as you don't change the topology of the system, you can actually enlarge or shrink the lattice size. In fact, to study the ground states only, we can just focus on a lattice that has only four spins, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And by periodic boundary condition, you see, it looks like there are 9 spins, but actually four spins, because the top line and lower the bottom lines are identified, and the left and right, they identify. So effectively, there are just four distinct spins, physical spins in the system. So we can actually study the ground state Hilbert space on a lattice, square lattice, as small as having just four spins. As I mentioned here, here you can see that we have two sets of bases of the ground states. Actually, there can be a lot more bases, right? There can be an infinite number of sets of bases of a Hilbert space. So there must be a unitary transformation that can relate different bases of the ground state Hilbert space. And indeed, these sets of the sets of unitary transformations relating different bases of the ground states can be generated by just two simple operations. The first one is called a S transformation, I should say. S transformation, what it does is to exchange the two directions of the torus by rotating the square lattice 90 degrees in either directions. Here we choose rotating it by 90 degrees counterclockwise. So when you rotate it counterclockwise by 90 degrees, you can see that a loop that is along this direction would turn out to be a loop along the vertical direction. So this is effectively, it exchanges a large loop along this direction with a large loop along the other direction. So S matrix actually exchanges these two sets of bases. And the T transformation is a shear transformation. It doesn't rotate the lattice, but squeeze the lattice like a shear, okay, to one side. Here we choose shear the lattice to the right hand side, like this. Okay, this shear reflected on the torus, it looks like that we actually cut torus open here, and then rotate one end by two pi, and then reconnect the ends of this loop. So effectively, it changes the basis loop like this, representing a basis of the ground states into a new basis, which is a mixture of this large loop and this smaller one. So this is what the T matrix does. Okay. And these are the representation of S and T transformations on this four-dimensional ground state Hilbert space. S and T, they are four-dimensional 4x4 matrices. And the T is already diagonalized in a so-called standard basis labeled by the annuals. So this T matrix has another physical meaning. It actually records the self-statistics of the annuals. So 1, 1, 1 means the anions 1e and m are self bosons, and the last one, which is the em composite, is actually self fermion. So T also has this meaning, and S also records the exchange statistics of different anions. Okay. So, but you see, on a lattice, this S and T transformations, which were abstract, can be actually understood by simple operations on the spins. And this part was actually largely inspired by the work done by Giffrey and his former postdoc, Lucas. So on a lattice, you see, on this 4x4 lattice, a 90-degree rotation counterclockwise is actually the same as exchanging the spins 1 and 3. And the T transformation is the same as exchanging the spins 1 and 2. So these two transformations can be implemented by quantum gates on such a spin system. Okay. Actually, the quantum gates are the so-called swap gates. We just need to swap the spins. And in practice, swapping the states of the spin. This actually gives us the tool to simulate this topological order in later slides. So, but why do we want to simulate topological orders? Because topological orders, they are quite abstract in theories. You see the model before here. Actually contains four body interactions. This is a tensor product of four operators. So this kind of Hamiltonian can hardly be found in realistic system. So this is one reason why we want to simulate the topological order to study its properties. And another thing is, one day some people may discover a kind of material and claim that this piece of material has a particular phase that is a topologically ordered phase. And we want to verify that. And how can we verify that? And we want to, we're trying to simulate these topological phases without prior knowledge of these topological phases to get the idea of how one may verify a particular piece of material has a topologically ordered phase or not. These are some previous studies, numerical studies of this kind of simulation. And what I just mentioned was this one in particular by Lucas and Giffrey that inspired us about the operations we can do on the lattice to simulate the S and T transformation. So what do we mean by simulate? So Feynman actually proposed the idea of quantum simulation. He actually proposed that using a nicely prepared quantum system, one can actually simulate any other kind of quantum systems in the world, even the entire universe. But that's too ideal, right? So the actual idea of quantum simulation has two parts, right? So there is the quantum system, the quantum system that we want to simulate, and the so-called quantum simulator, which is something that we have already in our lab. Okay. And this is some abstract quantum system that we cannot really manipulate or create in our lab yet. So this system has a certain initial state. And what we need to do is to map this initial state to an initial state of this quantum simulator. And then map the approximate the unitary evolution of this system, okay, the system that is being simulated, to a unitary evolution of the quantum simulator, and to a final state. And we map the final state back to the target system. So this is the idea of quantum simulation. This is the target system. This is the quantum simulator. And the quantum simulator that we used in our work is the so-called NMR quantum computer. It is actually a liquid state NMR. It has a the apparatus is very simple. It has a tube that contains a sample of molecules, thousands of them, immersed in certain liquid. Okay. And the idea is to use the nuclear spins of these molecules as quantum spins, as qubits. Okay. And then send radio frequency waves to control the polarizations of the spins of these nuclear spins, okay. Control them to achieve the quantum gate operation. So this is the rough idea of what a NMR quantum computer is. An NMR quantum computer is very good in a few aspects. One of the most important thing is that the decoherence time in an NMR quantum computer is very long. It actually allows one to achieve about 1,000 gate operations within the decoherence time of the NMR computer. And it can be operated at room temperature and room pressure. So you don't need some super cooler to do the job. You can just do it in your regular room. Okay. So this is another advantage of an NMR quantum computer. So, but NMR quantum computer does not do computation on what we are usually familiar with, the pure states, but on something called a pseudo-pure state, which is actually a density matrix, because there are many molecules of the same type in this in the sample. So it's actually an ensemble of same spins in the system. So the system is actually in certain mixed state, and we can measure the polarization of the spins, the overall polarizations of the spins of the system to read out the occupation of the spin polarization. So they use this idea of pseudo pure state, and this is actually a pure state of a pure spinner. And the advantage of using this pure pseudo pure state is that you see this is actually what we really want to know, the expectation value of certain unitary operation or quantum gate in the state of this spinner or pure state. But to measure, to find out this value, what we need to do is just to find out the expectation value of this K in the pseudo-pure state, Because this value is already known, because we already know what kind of operation we want to do, right? So this trace is a constant of this operation K, a certain unitary operation. And the expectation value of this unitary operation in the pure state is actually can be obtained by expectation value of this K and this pseudo-pure state. So the measurement is very simple in NMR quantum computer and without actually destroying the state. So the state can be kept there for later use. And this is the quantum circuit for such a kind of measurement. So in practice, we couple a so-called ancillary qubit with the physical qubits that we do computations on. And these are controlled V and controlled U gates. These are set of unitary operations we want to operate on these spins that we do computation. And this ancillary qubit was initialized in a superposed state. In the end, you can find out actually the expectation value of the set of operations in this pseudo-pure state can be obtained by simply measure the expectation value of this the single ancillary qubit in its own state. So by doing this, we do not need to destroy the state of the physical spins that we use to do computation. So they can be kept for later quantum gate operations. So this is very good. So this is a short introduction to NMR quantum computer. Now here is the real deal about simulating the Z2Tori code on an NMR simulator. Okay, so what do we do? What do we really want to do? Like what I said, we want to see if we can verify a certain piece of material has a topologically ordered phase or not.
Right.
So for that purpose, we actually want to assume that we do not have much prior knowledge to what the topological order would be in this material. Okay. But here, of course, we already know it is the Z2Tori code Hamiltonian, but we want to make it more realistic. So we modify the Z2Tori code Hamiltonian to a new Hamiltonian. We call this our target Hamiltonian. And what we want to simulate is actually this target Hamiltonian. And this target Hamiltonian is the Z2Tori code Hamiltonian plus an extra term here and a so-called disorder term. And this is so-called the detuning term. What does it mean? It actually, here is the detuning term. It actually adds something similar to an external magnetic field to all the spins in this system. Okay. And you can see that if we tune in this parameter H to a certain critical value, all the spins of the system will be polarized in the same direction. And it'll definitely destroy the Z2Tori code, topological order. So we expect to observe this kind of breakdown of the topological order by tuning the parameter H. And then this third disorder term has different functions. Okay, the first function is to make the system more realistic. So we have a local perturbation to each of the spins in the system. This is more similar to the realistic situation in the piece of material that you may have. Okay, the material may not be so pure. So each of the spins in the system may have a certain disorder. Okay. The second purpose of this order is to get rid of any accidental symmetry in the system. Because the reason why we can do S&T transformations on the lattice, okay, on the lattice to transform the basis of the ground state Hilbert space is because this S&T matrices transformations, they're actually the symmetry of the Hamiltonian. Symmetry of the Hamiltonian. Okay. If they are not the symmetry Hamiltonian, then they wouldn't be able to transform different bases of the ground states. However, in a realistic system, there might be other accidental symmetries that bring some accidental extra ground state degeneracy to the system. And we do not like that. So we add some local perturbations to this. You see, each parameter is different for each of the spins. So this is a local perturbation. So this local perturbation will effectively destroy all possible accidental symmetries while still keeping the S&T transformation as a symmetry of the Hamiltonian. Okay. And the third function of this term, I will explain to you in the next slide. So what we want to do is we want to simulate the ground states of this target Hamiltonian. And we want to do S&T transformations on this target Hamiltonian, okay, and to measure the S&T matrices to see if this system would really be in a Z2 topologically ordered phase. And by tuning this detuning parameter H, and we can check if the system, if it was initially in a Z2 topologically ordered state, would it actually break down, okay, at certain critical value of this parameter H. So that's the idea. So here is how we do the simulation. So this is our target Hamiltonian, right? This is our target Hamiltonian, but what we have is our NMR Hamiltonian. We don't really have this target Hamiltonian. How can we actually simulate that? So like what I said, we need to map the states. We need to map the initial states of the target Hamiltonian to the initial state of the NMR simulated Hamiltonian, and then to approximate the Hamiltonian evolution of the target Hamiltonian. So here's the idea. See, this H here is our target Hamiltonian. It's our target Hamiltonian. Okay. And this H random is some randomly prepared initial Hamiltonian. Okay. Initial Hamiltonian. And we don't even need to know what it is actually. We just need to prepare our NMR Hamiltonian in the ground state of this random Hamiltonian. Okay. And then we do a adiabatic evolution of our NMR system, such that at the end of the adiabatic evolution, the ground state of this random Hamiltonian becomes a ground state of this target Hamiltonian. See, but the target Hamiltonian is our modified C2 toric coat Hamiltonian. So we start with maybe this one works. Yes, we start with the ground state of some random Hamiltonian, and then we adiabatically evolve this random Hamiltonian using our NMR Hamiltonian, such that in the end of the adiabatic procedure, the state becomes a ground state of this target Hamiltonian.
Can I ask you this? I'm confused. I thought your motivation was that you want to be ready in case some material is is potentially realizing some topological phase. Mm-hmm. I thought you wanted tools to explore.
Yes, yes, yes.
If that's happening.
Right.
Now, but instead, now the story here is you are preparing that state. You are designing a circuit that adiabatically prepares that state.
Right.
So it sounds like it's another motivation.
Right, right. But the thing is, the connection is here. The connection is here. Here you see, here initially, we don't actually know how many ground states the target Hamiltonian may have. We don't actually know that. We don't actually know that. We prepare the system in the ground state of some random Hamiltonian, which may have just a unique ground state. Okay, we start from that one, and we evolve it such that it'll become a ground state of this target Hamiltonian. But it is just one ground state, right? It is just one ground state.
Yes.
And this target Hamiltonian may have multiple ground states, right?
But you definitely know which Hamiltonian is the target Hamiltonian in this evolution. You are preparing an evolution, a adiabatic evolution, where you know the initial Hamiltonian and the final Hamiltonian.
Right. Right.
So I don't see how this has something to do with the original goal that you mentioned before. I'm okay. This is interesting. The previous goal was interesting. I just don't
see
how they connect.
Yes, yes. Okay. Let me try to explain a little bit more about this procedure, and then I get back to your question.
Right.
Okay. So, however, now the problem is this target Hamiltonian may have more than one ground state. It has a may have a ground state degeneracy, but we don't know. We don't know whether it has or not. So here comes to another row, a third row of this disorder term. This when this order term is added, it may split the original degenerate ground states into non-degenerate states. But still, we can choose the parameter such that it is small enough and such that the splitting of the energy level between the degenerate ground state is not so big. It's still much smaller than the gap between these ground states and the first excitations. Okay. So in this way, we can always obtain one ground state first, and then we change the random Hamiltonian. We start from a new random Hamiltonian. It is just totally random, and we don't know what it is. And we start from that ground state and do an evolution again, a adiabatic evolution, to achieve a ground state. But that ground state may be the same or proportional to the previously obtained ground state. Okay? So we check that. If it would be the proportional to the originally to the previously obtained ground state, we do it over again. We start from a new random Hamiltonian and from its ground state to obtain another ground state of this target Hamiltonian. And it shows that we do not need to do many iterations. In this particular case, we just need about 100 rounds, meaning choosing 100 different random Hamiltonians and starting from their ground states. And we can obtain all the possible ground states of this target Hamiltonian, no, In this case, of course, they're just four. And when we obtain four, we can see that no matter how you choose a new random Hamiltonian, you wouldn't be able to jump out of that that space of four states. So now coming back to your question, I know this is not ideal because we already know the target Hamiltonian, which is a zero Torrey chord Hamiltonian, right? Well, and the evolution we are simulating is the evolution of this zero Torrey chord Hamiltonian. But we believe this may bring us some experience in the near future when we really don't know what's going on in the system. We can still try to start from some random Hamiltonian and then evolve the ground state of the random Hamiltonian to explore the ground state Hilbert space of certain.
So I have my material, say, on the torus, mm-hmm. and then I polarize it with a strong magnetic field, and I adiabatically remove the magnetic field, and then I produce different ground states. Is that the idea?
We don't really polarize it.
Or just more generic?
We don't really polarize it, because this is a small perturbation. This epsilon is a very small perturbation. So, and this one is the term that may polarize the entire system. This one that may polarize the entire system. This is a small one, because we don't want this perturbation to be too large. Otherwise,
The target Hamiltonian. And then the adiabatic process starts with another Hamiltonian.
Yeah, a random Hamiltonian, which is unknown state.
Which is not this one.
Which is not this one. Which is not this one. Yeah. So.
But this looks like a magnetic field. In this particular
But it's not a global magnetic field. It's a local one. Local. Just a random local Hamiltonian.
So the connection to the original motivation is not very detailed at this
Yes,
point.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Right.
But that's the idea. Our ideal goal is to achieve that. And using this technique, we just want to see that if we can really exhaust or explore the entire ground state Hilbert space of certain topologically ordered state. And it shows that we indeed can do this.
And shouldn't we, I mean, this is four qubits, so that's clear, but if we had a large number of qubits, shouldn't we be concerned about...
Good question.
...about the fact that this gap is going to be... Well, there will be generically, we expect a phase transition?
No, actually, this is a good question. Actually, you see, according to the theory of topological orders, if you increase the size of the system, the gap between these degenerate ground states would be exponentially suppressed by the size of the system, right?
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the gap that you have to overcome from the initial random, mm-hmm. the ground state of the initial random Hamiltonian mm-hmm. to the ground state of the topologically ordered Hamiltonian. This adiabatic evolution, right? It's based on the idea that you go slow enough compared to the gap in the system throughout the evolution. The question is whether your initial state corresponds to topologically ordered system or not.
Initial state, no. Initial state, you see, this is just a random single qubit single term.
Between that initial state for the original Hamiltonian to the final Hamiltonian, you will close the energy gap in the system. In the asymptotic limit. So in a very large system, the gap will close. In going from ground state to the random...
Yes, that's a good question. Now I see what you mean. The thing is, one needs to carefully choose this disorder parameter such that... No. The reason is, in an adiabatic evolution, one can only go from ground state to ground state.
Yeah.
You cannot go from a ground state to an excited state. But here we can choose the disorder parameter such that the gap between the originally degenerate ground states are not so big, such that the transition between these ground states would be allowed. actually, we want to close the gap at a certain point. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to reach all the four possible states, right, in this case, or any number of possible ground states. Otherwise, you would only be able to reach one single ground state. When you open the gap, this target Hamiltonian has a unique ground state, right? Is that true?
Up to exponentially, it's exponentially degenerate, right?
Yes. It has a unique ground state. But we still want to reach the other states, which are not so far from it, which were originally degenerate before adding this term to open to split the gap, right? Split
gap. Let me ask you later, but my concern is that in going from the random Hamiltonian to the topologically ordered one, if you want to do this adiabatically, which is what you call this process, you'll have to go arbitrarily slow.
Yes. Yes, and that's actually what we need. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to explore the other states in the ground state Hilbert space. Yes, good. Okay, now here, so this is the idea of to obtain the ground states of the target Hamiltonian. But how do we really implement this evolution, right? What we wanted to do is to simulate this target Hamiltonian, but this target Hamiltonian has four-body interactions, right? So we don't really have that. NMR quantum computer has only two-body interaction. So the idea is to use the two-body interaction to simulate the four-body interaction, which is something we can do. Okay. And I'll skip this one, and I can come back to this later. So this is actually the quantum circuit, actually the pulse diagram in this NMR computer, such that we can use this combination of pulses to simulate the four-body interactions using just two-body interactions in the NMR computer. And they have a program, an algorithm, to find out the sequence of pulses, what sequence of pulses one should choose, such that the two-body interactions in the NMR system can simulate the four-body interactions in the target Hamiltonian. Okay, and this is the NMR, the molecule and used in the NMR system. Okay. We use five nucleus spins. And this spin zero is actually the ancillary spin I mentioned in the previous slides that one used to measure the state or the expectation value of quantum gates on the NMR system. So now let's come back to the idea. So like what I said, by using this random adiabatic evolution, we can actually achieve all the possible, explore the entire ground, how should I say, we can obtain a basis of the ground state Hilbert space. But this basis is a random basis because we started from the ground state of certain random Hamiltonian. Right? So this is a random basis, which do not look nice. If we just try to obtain S and T transformations on this basis, it wouldn't look nice and we wouldn't be able to recognize them. Okay? But we can still do. We can measure the S and T operations, transformations on this random basis. And then using just the linear transformation, we can turn the spaces into a set of orthonormal bases, which look nicer. But here, because of experimental errors, this base, the S and T matrices obtained in this orthonormal basis may not even be normal matrices, which means they might not be diagonalizable. Okay. So such that we can turn them into diagonalizable matrices, we need to use certain numerical techniques, which is called the optimization. It is just a way of finding the normal matrices that are closest to the experimentally obtained S and T matrices that are diagonalizable. So used by optimization and diagonalization of the S and T matrices, we can actually find out or cast the originally obtained random basis of the ground states into a set of so-called standard bases labeled by the anions, and find out that the S and T matrices do agree with the theoretical value. And this is the experimental results, and here one can see that this is the tuning parameter H. Okay. So initially, when H is rather small, okay, we can see that we indeed have four degenerate ground states. But actually, because of the splitting we add into the system, there's some tiny gap between these degenerate four ground states. But what's important is the gap between these degenerate states and the first excitation is huge enough, such that no transition would happen between these ground states, these low lying states and the first excitation. And one can measure the S&T matrices and see that their values indeed agree with the theoretical value. Okay, perfect. It's 1, 1, 1, minus 1. Even when H is close to this critical value, this T matrix is still quite nice. Agree with the theoretical value very well. However, when H reaches the critical value HC, the first excitation will come down and cross the degenerate ground states. Okay, and from this point onward, the S and T matrices would lose their meaning because there will be just a unique ground state anymore, just a unique ground state. And the T matrix, S and T matrices would undergo a very abrupt change in their values. So the T matrix is completely almost destroyed, and also the S matrix.
Is this experimental data?
Yes, this is experimental data. So here, this data shows that indeed something happens here, and the Z2 toric code topological order breaks down at this point. We try not to use the word phase transition because this is a small system.
But these are with NMR, so these are not pure states, but these
random,
very close to identity states.
Yes.
And so how do you purify the data? It's just standard...
This standard techniques. Yes.
You know how pure the highly mixed state is?
Yeah, I'm not an expert on NMR computers, but the our collaborators, these experimentalists, they have standard techniques of doing this. And the fidelity is very high of the states. It's 99 points. So, and this actually shows that we actually achieved what we wanted to do. So here's just a summary. And yes, we want to try to see if we can do similar things on larger systems. And this shouldn't be impossible because the method we use is actually scalable. Because, for example, the S&T transformations on the square lattices, the number of swaps we need to do this scale with the size of the system only polynomially.
But NMR is not very scalable.
Good question. Yes, NMR is not scalable, but the method is transportable. We can move it to for example, superconducting qubits. So, yeah, and thank you for your attention.